a deep, deep, deep gratitude to Debtors Anonymous and all the people who have sustained it, built it, supported it, worked it for nearly 50 years. It has given me a beautiful, thank you, Kleenex. It has given me a beautiful, fulfilling, and satisfying life. And we are fortunate to have each other and so much wonderful literature with new works always being completed. We are also fortunate to have a wonderful website with so many resources for our greater community. I heard in a breakout session this morning about the prayers, how all the prayers from the new workbook are there. I know the meetings link for me has been a lifeline. I love the way the meetings link works. And I just wanted to say, whoever's in charge of that, thank you so much. I know it's higher power, but there's also a human or humans involved. And I just love the ease and grace that I could find a meeting when I need one, because that's a tool that I really appreciate. And thank you, World Service and this committee, for all that you did to bring us to this moment. And I'd like us all to give a round of applause. So just as a reminder, there might be people moving from that table in to here, so please make space for that to happen. So now I want to just say thank you to the committee for inviting me to be the Fellowship Day speaker at this lunchtime. My last unsecured debt was August 18th in 2005. And when this started to unfold for me, I realized, wow, that is pretty profound and a privilege to be here today as I'm 9 days away from my 20th anniversary. Thank you, DA friends and fellows and my higher power for helping me to get to this moment. As some of you know, 4 years ago, I experienced a contraction in my brain, which was medically called a stroke. And I don't remember signing up for that. I wrote here, "Dear God, I don't remember signing up for that." It radically shifted my life, my DA program, my relationship to my higher power and people, and my use of language. So it is a total miracle to be standing here. Thank you. And I said yes because I trust my higher power. For me, that's what it's all about. I know that my words are in my higher power's hands and that my life and my recovery are also in the hands of my higher power. DA recovery is a process, a journey. I used to think that there was a destination, that I would be recovered one day, but every day I am dealing with money. I'm either earning it, I'm spending it, I'm managing it. There's no way out. So on that note, I'm going to say the serenity prayer again. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. So in 1987, the prison guard at the LA County Jail asked me, "What's a nice girl like you doing in a place like this?" And I thought, that's a great question. I grew up in North Hollywood in the 1960s and 70s. We were a solidly middle-class family. My dad was heroic, popular, funny, well-liked, gregarious and kind, very competitive and very critical. He was a civil servant with the LA County. My mom was beautiful, like a movie star from the 50s, very artistic and creative. But she bought into the housewife role, and she drank every day. My mom and dad both had dreams that they did not live out. They bought a house, they bought cars, my mom managed the money. I always had a feeling of deprivation. I had a queer dissatisfaction, like that was pretty constant. I realized after my parents passed away that actually they were saving for their future, and they were managing their money. I interpreted it, I think, because of the alcoholism as a deprivation. In the 60s and 70s in LA, there were lots of TV and commercial ads that was all burgeoning, portraying everyone with new things that made them look so happy. This created a culture of wanting something that I didn't need and certainly couldn't afford. I never learned much about my needs as I became focused on what the media and community created as my needs and wants. It was very confusing. It seemed like it was all about having cars, houses, clothes, hairdos, nails, gym membership. That was my growing up. I felt like I could never be too rich or too skinny. There was a lot of fast money that was being made in the industry at that time. And I just wanted what other people had. And I wanted to be in their club, not mine. Growing up, my money modeling was give up your dreams, get a 9-to-5 job, make sure to use coupons, get 2-to-1 even if you don't, get 2-for-1 even if you don't need it, buy things on sale, and save money, even though I didn't understand what that meant, or why would I do that? So for me, there was never enough. I wasn't enough. I don't have enough. I was smart, but not the smartest, competitive, but not a winner, popular, but not the most popular. I was embarrassed by my family. I found myself comparing and critiquing, including body size and shape and money and job and prestige. I wanted to win and do it all right, and I was never enough. I waited to be rescued. I searched for get-rich-quick schemes, became obsessed with money. I neglected self-care, suffered from doubt, and I got my first credit card when I was 18. I thought I'd made it. It was a gasoline card, and I really felt like somebody. I moved out of my childhood home, started just living my life as independently as I could. But the experience of my childhood led to lying and stealing and debting and under-earning and compulsive spending, managing chaos that I create by debting behaviors and vagueness, secrecy, shame, embarrassment were always lurking. Debting and under-earning became ways that I would lie to myself about my ability to pay bills and expenses and ability to pay back what I owe. Okay, that's the end of what I had typed up this morning. So in 1986, I was married to my first husband. He had this great idea to steal money from a business that I was running, and so we proceeded to do that, which is how I ended up at LA County Jail, which is that moment when the prison guard asked me that question I started with. And the reason I asked for Kleenex is, you know, like if I could save anyone either in this room or who happens to listen to a recording one day, if I could save them that misery, if I could save their family that heartbreak, I that's why I'm here. Like, I am here to share my story. I say only, because being incarcerated, even for one day, if you've been there, is horrible. I was only inside for 6 months. And when I came out, I was on probation and paid restitution for 6 years. I was a single mom, and I moved from LA to San Francisco in 1990. I knew I had a problem. I don't know how I found DA, but I found DA in the early 90s. I was continuing to compulsively spend. I mean, money and I have an erratic relationship. I love it. I hate it. It stresses me out. It gives me great pleasure. I can obsess about it. I can completely ignore it. And as a compulsive spender, I moved here. I was still... I got a job, everything was okay, but I spent outside my means. Then I started coming to DA and I realized I don't have to have to spend money to have fun. That was one of my big lessons in the beginning. My daughter and I would go to the beach. We would build sandcastles. We would go to the park. It was completely amazing to me. I have such a vivid memory of that, how it shifted from, you know, if I'm going to have fun, I have to go to the theater for $300. To I could go spend the day at the beach. So that was a really big gift of the program for me. Because my also, you know, kids, I don't want to jump to the kids just right now, but kids don't, they feel the joy. They feel like when happiness is happening, they don't necessarily connect with, gee, I just spent $300 to go to the Nutcracker. Aren't you having fun? You know, a Nutcracker, aren't you having fun? So I really, really appreciated that sanity that brought to me. And Though in the 90s, although I was going to meetings, I continued to compulsively spend and to be vague and confused. And I was writing, you know, I was doing some reflections on my way here, so I was considering that I, you know, would go on these compulsive spender benders, you know, where I wouldn't even know. I didn't know what I had, what money I had. I didn't even know, like, do I have this object at home? Like, just so out of touch with what I spent money on, like, whether I had the money, whether I needed or wanted what I bought or whatever. So it was very confusing and very upsetting, and definitely I often in meetings introduce myself as a debtor and a compulsive spender, because that can creep up on me so easily. And I do not shop online. I know that about myself. Like, I just don't let myself do that. I pretend like it doesn't exist or I don't know how to do it. So, but I know that would be a slippery slope for me. I'm amazed how easy that button is. Sometimes if I do have to buy a book or something, I don't even have to put my credit card info in here. I just hit a button and they send it to me. So I just know. So that awareness has been super helpful. So now I'm in the 90s, and obviously it's kind of hard to get a job when you're a felon. I shouldn't say obvious, but that is the truth of the matter. So I ended up doing a lot of sales jobs. They didn't check background, and I became really good at it. And, you know, it's a little bit, I've pondered recently, a little bit disrespectful to work on straight commission. You know, you work really hard for nothing for a while, but it worked for me anyway. So I got my sea legs. And then in 2000, I started a nonprofit corporation. So I had a business, and in 2004, I stopped going to the P.O. box. I don't know what that is, and that's another place where I need Kleenex. But when I realized that so many months had gone by, that my bank account had a little fee, you know, $8 or something in the old days, went to zero, went under zero, and they closed the bank account because I hadn't gone for like 5 or 6 months. And that just scared the bejesus out of me. I thought, this disease is affecting way more than me. Like, I finally got it, even though it had been affecting all my family and so forth for years. But so I started going to the Tuesday noon Menlo Park BDA meeting. And hot people. And I never stopped going. So that's 21 years that I have gone to constant meetings and been in program. And so I just wanted to share my journey up to that point. Sometimes I write poems. I'm going to read one right now, called The Crack. I see a small stream of light on the concrete floor. Sunlight streaming through, touching the cold place. I move my body slowly toward the light. If I could let the sun's light touch my hair, my skin, my heart. If I could just move that little bit, adjust myself, my inner self, my spirit self, my body self. Move myself, my inner self, my spirit self, my body self, into the light, though it is a small crack only today. I just need to feel the light, to let the light touch me, to let the light lift me a little bit today. That would be a good day. Today I belong, thank you. I was telling some of my friends, okay, I brought three poems. I did not bring my puppets, my ukulele, my juggling balls, any of my artwork. But there you have it. Next time. So I was enjoying reading through literature. I always enjoy reading DA stuff because it always drops me into I could read this. This is how it feels to me. I could read the same pamphlet over and over again, and I read different things every time. So I read somewhere that, I think it was when I was reading through the traditions, to belong to DA, I must have a desire to stop incurring unsecured debt. I'm like, okay, I belong. And that our expertise as members of DA is recovering from incurring unsecured debt. I like that too. As I said, my last unsecured debt was August 18th, 2005, and that was my older daughter's student loan. And I wrote down as well, I do have a couple of the notes, my last unconscious spending spree was between 2008 and 2010. So I got Kleenex, but in any event, my parents died and my aunt died, and I've got some inheritance. It was in the mid six figures, and couldn't tell you where it went. That's what I mean by unconscious spending spree. I was in program, I was in PRGs, and I was spending, and I got to the point where I said, okay, PRG people, I have got to keep some of this money. This is just kicking my butt. I cannot stop spending. And so we created a, like, do not go below level, like a, you know, a line, which was not far from where I was, and I stuck with that. Yay! So like I wrote, fortunately because of the program, I did not spend all that money, because I could have very easily. I could have spent all that money and then gone into debt again. That's kind of me without program, so. Yeah. So what I was hoping to do now is just talk about some of my favorite discoveries as I've gone along. This is my big book. I love the big book. Got like so many post-it notes tacked in here, and some of them like read this today kind of thing. And I would like to. What I realize is a lot of what I marked in here is about spirit. And I also marked in the spiritual pamphlet a bit of other spiritual stuff. So I think I'm just feeling that right now. So we'll get to that, hopefully. So first, this is my brain. I'm going to just show you my stack of stuff. I tried to get organized. It's not very organized. So because what I realize is DA and my program is very multidimensional. It's like some kind of hologram, because there's all these factors. There's like how I live, and then there's how I did live, and then there's how I'm interacting with other people, and how I'm doing my money, and then that just keeps going on. So it becomes a bit complicated in a way, like as far as making it linear for a 45-minute share, which by far is another miracle. If I do it to the end, but I'm trying, and I did set my timers, which I think are a little behind, so I should just start with time, because time is another one of my issues, but I probably can't find time in the stack here the way it's ordered. I could have done an alphabetical in any event. So what's on top is service. And to me, service is one of the tools, and there are two service stories that I remember. One is at the Tuesday noon BDA meeting I was going to, you know, the treasury position came up. And that just scared the bejesus out of me. I'm like, I'm an embezzler. I lie, cheat, and steal. I cannot do a treasury. And it took me probably a year to get the guts up to just say yes to that. Because that really wasn't who I was. It was something that happened. But I was just had this whole, like, it was so intense, but saying yes to that service, which was very complicated, but it really changed me. And saying yes to this service today, with all the circumstance in my my brain and my reality, I don't even have words for it. So I would like to encourage everyone to do service that scares you a little bit. that's just a little bit out of your comfort zone. And then also do everyday service. I mean, including answering the phone or writing a text, or that's what I do. I'm just saying that. I don't mean to be like telling you what to do, but service in through program has really also encouraged me to have be more of service in the world. Like, I notice that I spend a lot of time in relationships and a lot of time helping my friends, and it's very open-hearted, and it's a kind of service I learned in DA. So I think that it will go over into other areas of your life, as it has mine. So I wrote down meetings as another tool, and I had a chance to start a meeting once. I go to meetings, I go to phone meetings, I go to video meetings now that they're there, and in-person meetings. I feel, for me, meetings are so fantastic. I probably have met some of you in the Zoom room. I probably met some of you on the phone. We don't even know who we are, because all we ever hear is a voice. But I found a huge benefit from going to meetings in other areas geographically, and just other types of meetings. Like, the more different kinds of meetings I go, I feel like my program has really rounded out, and I've gotten a lot of insights and a lot of wisdom and understanding of who I am and more about the program. So I just want to, I really experience like East Coast meetings being different than the Bay Area, being different than LA, just as an example. But it's interesting. It's all the same literature. It's just, it's good for me to toss it around a little bit. So I do have a tendency to want to drift back into control of my my world. And things and money can easily become my higher power or perceived notion of my source. And it feels like sometimes, like, I'm hooking up my, it's kind of a weird, whatever you call it, but, you know, like, I'm hooking my sleigh to money instead of to higher power. Like, and I feel like, When I've sensed that coming on within the last 10 years, I just start going to a meeting a day. So I've done 30 and 30s. I've done 90 and 90s more than once. And especially now, I did it before Zoom, just in person and on the phone. But with Zoom meetings, it's not so hard. The commitment is hard. But I always find the change. Like, I always find a moment, I don't know when, but somewhere in the week, two or three of going to a meeting every day, I'm like, oh, it's all about God. And that's an interesting, I don't want to say surprising, but interesting what I found about meetings. Okay. I'm just looking for another tool here. Oh my God, so sad. All right. So it's funny because I'm finding these random things, like what I do, like record keeping as a tool. I'm going to jump to that. All right. So I've been going really regularly the last probably 8 years to a Saturday morning phone meeting that's numbers and record keeping. And we have a speaker, and then after it's an hour meeting, and then the format is a speaker, and then after, and shares. And then after, we have a work in silent solidarity meeting. It's called a workshop. And I just wanted to say that the clarity, like the profound impact that having a devotion to my record keeping has had on my program and my recovery is just, is pretty fantastic, because I don't, numbers, like the whole thing, because I suffer from vagueness and confusion, and the whole thing of keeping numbers, I don't know, it's just kind of too hard. And I have a household with a marriage, I have my own pursuits, I have a business, like I have a number of bank accounts, I have cash, I have accrual, it's just a lot. But on Saturday morning, I basically sit on this meeting, you know, do service in the meeting, and then I'm always on the workshop. And I work on whatever's up for me. And part of that has been kind of understanding that if I sit long enough with my numbers, this is what I've found. If I sit long enough that I get the clarity. Like sometimes I have to sit for an hour and I don't get it. And then all of a sudden I get like a little light of what it is. And then it's like, oh, okay. Then the next time I come back to it, it's clearer. And then a year goes by and I don't even remember that struggle because it's something I just do now. And I use paper and pencil, I doodle, I use graph paper, I use the computer, I have software. I mean, I just kind of let myself have a lot of experience with possibilities. I'm not very rigid in how I do my numbers, but I do them. And I think that's what matters for me and my recovery, and that, you know, at the end of the year, I have a, you know, I'm ready. I'm like January 10th, I'm ready to file my taxes because I've been doing my numbers all year, you know? So, but to say that, I'm saying that because 10 years ago, no way. Before that, no way. So it's just something recent and notable that that has been happening, and I'm so grateful. The other thing that I wanted to mention is I have a calendar for my business. I'm a business owner. I have one of those big desk calendars because I like to use my pencils and pens, and I write the beginning of the month. I make a income generating plan in addition to my spending plan, and I use my calendar as a communication tool with higher power. So I basically say, okay, these are the days I'm earning money. These are the days I can still earn money. And, you know, like the things that I know are coming up in the earnings. And I have a little way I summarize that. So, and that is so revolutionary for me because as an under-earner, I mean, you know, 5 years ago, if you asked me how much I earned, I'd be like, I don't know. I don't know. And it's like, how could I not know? But I didn't. So it doesn't matter how. It's just like, that was the way my program was running me. And but I find it very interesting working with that calendar and higher power and creating a, it's kind of opposite of spending, but you know, it's generating revenue plan. What a concept. Yeah, that's super helpful. And God seems very, very interested in looking at my numbers. Like, it seems like it's a way to communicate with my higher power. And when I'm, you know, when I'm in doubt or wondering and I write things down and I can kind of turn it over, it's almost like a step 1, 2, 3 for me where I'm like, I just don't get this. Even if I can't reconcile something and I'm really frustrated, then I could just be powerless. You know, came to believe a power greater than myself could to restore me to sanity and turn it over. And, you know, it might resolve that half hour and it might take a week, but it does resolve. And I think God has begun to understand, like, what I need as far as revenue and what my values are as far as my spending. And it seems to, the more clear I get, the easier it is for God to get that and easier for it is to see the results and have the serenity because the money's working. And maybe it's 3 years ago now, I came to my husband and said, we're going to use this book, The Numbers One Approach. And he's like, whatever. Because, I mean, I'm like the person in the marriage that's really, I don't know, working program, the way I work. I'm no judgment, just saying, like, this was my idea. He said, okay. So I started the spreadsheet with all these categories, and it was fascinating because they have a certain order. And I'm always encouraging people in my meetings to look at this book because first it's spiritual, then it's housing, then it's food, then it's transportation, then it's clothing, then it's personal care, then it's health care, then it's dependent care, then it's entertainment, then it's education, vacation, personal business, gifts, investments, taxes, and then debt repayment, as you all know, is at the end. But I thought, well, what if we just do that? And like, God can see that we have these priorities as suggested by DA, and it's worked really well. And I mean, we're talking now at this point, I was figuring this the other day, so let's say I came to San Francisco in 1990 and I started coming to DA around then, 90, 91. So that's like 34 years. So it's never too late to start with the numbers one approach. And I want to say that it's a spreadsheet now on the DA website too, so it's a more accessible perhaps for more people in that regard. So that was my record keeping. The other thing I want to mention too is cash for me, cash. Cash is a slippery slope. It's still a slippery slope. I don't know what it is about cash. Maybe it was because when I got that like 5 cent allowance when I was a kid and I didn't really know like anything about saving or what I was doing money. I just ran down and spent it, you know? Like people ask me, did you get an allowance? How much did you get? What did you do with it? I'm like, dude, I think I always just bought a candy bar. And I think maybe that was some imprint with my cash, but now I get an allowance every 2 weeks from my household account, and I never take cash back at the store, ever. Like, that's like, I don't shop online, like I never do cash back. And there's always that little button, because I used to just do cash back, like, sure, I'll take 40, sure, I'll take 60, sure, I'll take 100, sure, I'll take 40. And I didn't know where any of it went. So I'm like, I'll just stop doing that. So that was very, very helpful. And then I have also my allowance can go for some, that's cash that I get. So it can go for some incidentals, coffee or things like that. But also I have envelopes. And I know we've talked, I'm sure people have worked with cash envelopes before, but for me, it's brought me so much happiness. It's the weirdest thing. And I have this string wrapped around them because I know cash is my slippery slope. And I say, please, higher power, help me manage the cash, right? Like, I feel like I'm so powerless. I can't even go to the envelope without, like, doing a prayer, right? Because it just feels like I might just grab it all and run out and spend it. And I realized like I got to some core, what really matters to me, categories with my cash envelopes. And it felt like things that I wasn't giving myself otherwise, like art supplies and body work and Christmas presents. And, you know, I think probably normal people would have had those categories, but I'm not necessarily in that normal category. So for me, all that seemed like, I don't know how to describe it, but I just know when I look at my cash envelopes and I look and see there's money in them that it feels really good to me. And now we have accruals in a bank account. Whoa. But that is something I wanted to talk about because I clearly see that not having accruals will lead me to debting. Again, so maybe that took 30 years, but I have one of my PRG partners always saying it's like an expense. You have to put the accrual in. It's like an expense. And I would argue with them like, it's not an expense. I'm just moving money from here to there. That's not, you know, it's like, don't argue about it. Just put the money in the accrual. Whatever semantics, you know, with your PRG people, let's not worry about that right now. And so when I had my medical situation 4 years ago, dude, I realize you really do need a medical accrual. Somehow that worked out. I had insurance. We had some money for the, you know, the deductibles and stuff, but I had some dental work I needed done. So I was writing actually these like accruals for future necessities. So I have my envelope for stuff that are more fun and more, I don't know. I'm actually getting near to calling them a necessity because it's so powerful to, you know, have art supplies. My God, how could that not be a necessity? Anyway, that's just me. So so I've been thinking about like do I need a new car? Yeah, probably. Let's see. I'm, you know, 66 and I have 115,000 miles on my car. Yeah, I'll probably need a new car in my lifetime. So I'm going to need that accrual, right? So I just think that there's, you know, we have some money set aside for retirement, certainly not enough, but I'm not currently worried about that, which is a miracle of the program. We rent our house, so we don't have housing repairs. We do have taxes. So, and currently we're funding all of those every month, which is like nothing short of a miracle. And I wish I had a better way to connect what it was like then and now, but it's a miracle. This blame me want to tell you. So let me see how my time is doing. Okay, good. I think I'm on spot timing here. All right. I'm glad this isn't on video. What's up here? I think I wanted to talk about spending plan. I did that. All right. Well, one thing I'd want to say that's happened as well with the spending and earning and having using this numbers one approach is the first, you know, section is spiritual. And in that category is tithing, seventh tradition, books, classes, workshops, DA, literature, donations, tape CDs, and tithing. So I started tithing a few years ago. And wow, I'm surprised by that. I'm surprised by the impact it's had on my life. I'm surprised on the positive impact it's had on my income generation, how I feel about myself, how I feel about circulating resources. It's so powerful. Wow. And my I have a minister at the spiritual center that I go to, and she challenged me personally. I took it personally about 2 years ago now to tithe on my gross income. And I was like, what? Are you kidding me? Because I could hardly like squeeze it out of my net income of my business. And then I thought, you know what? That's really trusting God. Like if tithing for me is about, okay, God, I'm going to circulate this money. And okay, God, I'm going to trust you as I send that money off to places that inspire me. I'm just going to trust you. And it's been like, wow. Because I love giving. And there are places, people, including DA, I give to my local meetings. I try to give to our intergroup. I always give to general service. It's like, yeah, it's good. And then the other thing I did with Higher Power, I was like, okay, well, if I'm doing 10% to places that inspire me, then I also have to do 10% to my retirement. And it's working. Like, if you were to tell me that I was going to take 20% off my gross income and tithe and give and put it in the other 10 into my retirement, I'd be like, there's no way that's ever going to work out. But it did. It does, because that's how God is. So one last tool, awareness. So I'm aware of when I'm compulsively spending. I'm aware of when I'm like even thinking about compulsively spending. And I have awareness of my bank balances. Most of the time, it's not all the time, but I'm okay with how often I do have it. I have awareness of my spending plan, and I know what time it is. I know what time my appointment is. I know what time I'm supposed to be somewhere. I know what time I have to leave home in order to get there at a certain time. And that's, I just wanted to bring time in because time is a tricky thing for me, and I think it's a debtor, you know, it's a debtor issue because it's a resource in my life. So I'm very gently watching how I do use my time right now. I have a coach in a skill that I'm working on, and she goes, well, I guess, because I said I haven't really been practicing, and she goes, she doesn't say anything. It's so obvious I haven't been practicing. And so she just said, well, I guess whatever you're doing is more important than what you want to be doing, because I have a goal in this skill.
And I was like, wow, that really kicked my... But, you know, then I was like, well, what is more important than that? Like, I want to do this skill, but I never practice. So I just feel like it's just kind of the, you know, it used to be that I wasn't, you know, I overcommitted my time and didn't spend enough time making money. I feel like my money flows pretty good right now. And, but I'm not doing my art and I'm not doing my practicing, so... I'm always going to be a time weirdo. Not always, but, you know, it could happen. All right. So let me get down to my last section if I can find it. Okay. I'm just going to set one more timer. Hang on. Just so you know, I have 3 timers up here. Well, I came prepared, and there was not a timer assigned to this, so... Okay, Okay, one more little bit of writing. Find stillness. Listen, just be the oneness, the allness. This time, all time. The music, the dance, the climb, the place. That we are here in this beginning and this ending. One with the all within ourselves. Just remember and find stillness. Not only stopping to smell the roses, but taking time to look deeply into the folds and creases that exude perfection. This embodied form of you is a conduit for spirit and the senses, the gift of this body to see, hear, smell, touch, taste. Any and all of these pathways lead to our grander understanding of divine illumination. Pause, look, listen, touch, smell, taste, pause, reach, relax, breathe, empty, fill, repeat. Thank you. That was a recent writing, so because I'm having these issues with language in my brain, I was like, whoa, that was good, you know, when it came out. I felt like, okay, I had a moment. That was really very sweet, so... So a not so good day, hour, or minute. I'm actually going to say that over again because for me, my deading is, it's a minute by minute sometimes, hour by hour, day by day. So on a not so good day, hour, minute, there is fear, lies, jealousy, envy, vagueness, despair, isolation. On a good day, hour, minute, there is fellowship, truth, enough, sufficiency, clarity, hope, conscious contact, humility, generosity, and trust. On a not-so-good day, hour, or minute, I worry if I have enough, if I will squander what I do have, and stress that I will debt. On a good day, hour, or minute, whether I have money or not, I am at peace in my heart and happy and grateful. On a not-so-good day, hour, or minute, I get overwhelmed, create chaos, so that I can heroically manage it and fix it. On a good day, hour, or minute, I pause and think and tell the truth, so I am placing a solid brick in the foundation of my life and business. On a not-so-good day or hour or minute, I feel mad, sad, forgotten, and neglected. On a good day, hour, or minute, I am a child of God, am held gently, kindly, am encouraged and appreciated. I feel God's presence in my life. On a not so good day, hour, and minute, I'm waiting and expecting to be rescued or daydreaming about getting rich quick and different get rich quick schemes. On a good day, hour, or minute, I am in action with my life and my business to make my life fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. On a not so good day, hour, or minute, I can do it all myself. On a good day, hour, or minute, I ask HP and other people to help me. Yay. Thank God I got those good days, hours, and minutes. So wanted to speak a little bit about visions. I've been having this really wild experience that God knows what my vision is. It's so profound to me. Because I'm thanks for the clinic, Joanna. Because ever since I came to program, I was like, wow, people who are this lunch speaker, they're like, that would never happen to me. But you know what? Higher power knows. That was part of my vision. Like, to get to this point, even with my rearranged brain, in addition to that, like, that's just, like, outside of my imagination, God, like, brought me here. And and I'm free. You know, I'm free in so many ways. And someone was so kind to share before earlier, you know, because you don't always realize how you help people. And that's why I was so adamant in the beginning. It was like, I want everyone in the room to hear me, right? Because we don't know. We don't know when we share in a meeting. Like, if I'm at a 90-90 and I'm at a meeting and they're like, oh, we need a speaker, I'm like, I'll be the speaker. Like, I don't know. I don't know who I'm going to help, you know? And I don't know how I'm helping, because you never know that, right? Unless you're in constant contact in a meeting. But even then, like, people come and go out of meetings and you don't know if you help them. So God knows I want to be of service in that way, and I want to get out of my way. And being here is just, you know, and I feel like God has a way bigger vision than my little pea brain could ever come up with. And I talked a little bit about my art supplies, but I'm finding it really hard to get out of my way. You know, like, yeah, why aren't I practicing? I feel like God has this, you know, God gave me gifts that I'm supposed to be expressing. But my, up until now, like all my chaos, confusion, and entangled with my money and my debting has kind of held me back in a way, right? Or held me down. Or when I was a kid, I really wanted to be a marine biologist. Still makes me cry. And they're like, how would you make money at that? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I guess, is that how I should I look at everything? Like, how am I going to make money at that? And literally, that's been a filter I put everything through, right? So if I'm about to do a creative thing, then I'm like, oh, but how would I make money at that? And then I stop. So I think that the creative gifts that we have are from the creator, right? And I have to stop asking that question. But now that I've outed myself, it should help. you know, I had a vision to live within my means and yet not have my means define me. So I love that. I do feel that right now. That could change. I have a little story about my spending plan. Ooh. Okay. I've got 10 more minutes. All right. So I have a quick story about my spending plan. So I had a referral to cranial sacral therapy. It's like a kind of a massage. And I had $130 in this in my spending plan for that treatment. And I ended up at the Hot Springs, Wilbur Hot Springs, and there was a massage guy who had cranial sacral on his list. And I was like, well, I'm up here relaxing in the hot water, and I'd love to have a massage from this guy. And I already have $130 in my spending plan. He's only $175. So, you know, I'm sure that money I could take from, you know, like, I knew where I would get it from, right? So I had $175 to get a massage. He was amazing. Totally fixed my foot that didn't bother me for like 10 years, whatever. It was like just a great session, right? Turns out I get on his email list, and he comes to the Bay Area once in a while, and he does house calls. So like 2 months ago, I think it was after, at some point in the last, whenever he's in town, like, he'll drop me an email and say, I'm in town if you want a massage. So I was at my house with this amazing massage therapist, giving a massage. We had money put aside in an accrual, because now I have an official accrual that earns interest for massage. Like, it's in a bank account. And I'm like, wow, I guess this was a vision. But here I am in my own house having this amazing massage by this guy. So, yeah, anyway, I loved it. Yeah, and I did want to say that I'm experiencing a lot of satisfaction, a lot of happiness, a lot of serenity, doing classes, doing connecting with people. You know, this year, the person who asked me if I'd be willing to speak today said, oh, you should talk about all those things. And I thought, well, I'm not going to list them all, but just suffice it to say that the life of, like, I'm living my vision because I'm doing things that I really want to do. And the fact that maybe I can't make money out of or I won't do them professionally, well, I don't know if that's true or not. Maybe if I get out of the way, I could. Who knows? But, you know, but it's pretty exciting. Okay. I'm right near the end, guys. Thanks for hanging in there. A really strange thing happened on my way to the, what's that movie? On my way to the forum or whatever. On my way to a World Service Conference. So I went on a hike with a friend in a pretty remote area over here in the hills. I always put my purse in my trunk before I stop somewhere. It's like I always do that because there's very desperate people out there. I know because I used to be one of them before program. People do smash and grab. People take stuff. People grab old ladies, you know, bags out of their, whatever, out of their car windows. You know, it's like that's happening. But I was putting my, so I had my purse in the trunk. We went on a hike, came back, and it was like something was weird in the front seat. And I went in the trunk, got my purse, and all the debit cards and the cash had been stolen out of my purse from the trunk of my car. And I was like, wow, did I leave it unlocked? No, I didn't. I always put the trunk, put it in the trunk and always lock the car. Like, it's always what I do. So I am not even kidding you to say that someone broke into my car. They broke into four other people's cars as well because I made a police report. They took all my debit cards and all my cash. Within 2 hours, they had spent almost $4,000 on my debit cards. And I was like, so this is what happens to me. I'm like, oh, people are so desperate. Like I probably should be on that PI committee. DA, because people really need to know about Debtors Anonymous, but it was just like such a big hassle for me. And I thought back to my, you know, my ways 40 years ago, and it's like, yeah, I create a lot of havoc when I was stealing in my family and the people that I stole from. Like, this is happening to me right now, right before I'm doing this talk, so... So anyway, I just thought, okay, well, I knew exactly how much cash when I called to make my police report. I knew exactly how much cash I had. I knew exactly what cards were in my wallet. I knew exactly who to call. I called my boss because I had my work card in my wallet. Like I had so much clarity. And I would say, well, when am I going to get the money back? And they said, well, it could take 3-4 weeks. And I'm like, I'm about to go on vacation. And then I realized, oh, wait, I have accruals. So I deposit, you know, I transfer money from the accruals into the accounts that got depleted by thousands of dollars. And, you know, did all the paperwork and everything I needed to do. But then I thought, wow, see, you know, like, there but for the grace of God go I. There but for the grace of God... how I used to be and how it used to be, I wouldn't have had that clarity. Like, I wouldn't have even known what was stolen. Like, but I did. I knew all that. And now it's been, like, I think 4 weeks. The money's been returned. They call it a provisional deposit. But, you know, was declared to be fraud or deemed to be fraud. And, you know, and those guys are on the loose. Because they did it to four other people. And if they got 4,000 from my accounts, then it was probably a good morning for them, whatever they were up to. So I do want to just remember those who are still suffering. You know, those who come to our meetings and who are on the Zoom rooms and who are on phone meetings and who we meet on the streets or friends and family are still suffering, right? People are still smash and grabbing, stealing, jiggling cars and taking stuff that's not theirs. Dude, you don't want to do that. We want to get to the place, please, of, you know, having enough understanding of money flow and higher power to get us, you know, to keep us free. All right, I'm going to read a little big book. Page 417. And acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, or thing or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism or deadism, I could not stay sober or solvent. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as on what needs to be changed in me and in my attitudes. Shakespeare said, "All the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players." I forgot to mention that I was the chief critic. I was always able to find the flaw in every person, every situation, and I was always glad to point it out because I knew you wanted perfection just as I did. AA and acceptance have taught me that there is a bit of good in the worst of us and a bit of bad in the best of us, that we are all children of God and we each have a right to be here. When I complain about me or about you, I am complaining about God's handiwork. I am saying that I know better than God. For years, I was sure the worst thing that could happen to a nice guy like me would be that I would turn out to be an alcoholic. Today, I find it's the best thing that has ever happened to me. This proves I don't know what's good for me. And if I don't know what's good for me, then I don't know what's good or bad for you or for anyone. So I'm better off if I don't give advice, don't figure I know what's best, and just accept life on life's terms as it is today, especially my own life, as it actually is. And thanks to DA, I have new ways of living, hope, clarity, confidence and intuition, engaged life, living within my means, less and less fear, worry, resentment, and debt, jealousy and envy have faded. I value myself, fellowship, and faith. Generous and sharing, acceptance and gratitude. I live in reality and honesty. I have a rich life filled with meaning and purpose and an amazing relationship with my higher power. And I wrote down my phone number and my email up here. If anyone wants to contact me, I'm very open to outreach calls and any kind of service I might be able to help with. There's some things I still can't do, but the things I can, I will. Thank you.